Hello, everybody. I'm Johnny Calloway, and welcome to Says Who for the Addictive Personality. I am author of Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge Where Souls Connect. And I'm here with my co-host, Aura Nadrich.
Hi, everybody. I am Aura, and I'm so happy to be here with you. I am a certified life coach, certified mindfulness meditation teacher, and the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever, and the creator of the Says Who method for transforming negative and fear-based thoughts. And that's what we're going to help you do. We are going to help you transform those thoughts that get in the way of you creating the life that you want and deserve.
And on the show, we're going to be talking about the 12 steps, A Course in Miracles, and Aura Says Who method. The main thing we're going to talk about and how all three of those things work together is the power of thought and how your thought runs your life. It creates your life.
We are going to take these seven questions that I've created so that you can find out if your thoughts are real or if they're not, and if they're serving your well-being or if they're not. And by you sending us in your questions, we're going to be able to work with you directly so that we can help you use the Says Who method to change those thoughts out to make your life work.
Let's do it, Aura. Hello, everybody. This is Johnny Calloway, host of Morph Into a New You, where we believe that if you want to change your life, you got to change your mind about your life. And today we're doing the Says Who for the Addictive Personality. And it's Aura and I, Aura Nadrich and Johnny Calloway, here to talk with you today about taking responsibility for your thoughts. What do you say, Aura?
Yes. Hi, Johnny. That is so good. We got to definitely dive into that one. Taking responsibility for your thoughts is so important. It really is. That's a very important thing to look at about ourselves. We may not always want to do it, but we really need to. We need to own our thoughts, as I say, and Says Who. So let's start it. I love it.
Let's go for it. So tell me, Aura, how did you come to that conclusion that you needed to take responsibility for your thinking?
Because I know that we have so many thoughts. We've talked about it in previous shows. I say in Says Who, my book Says Who, that we think between, 40 and 70,000 thoughts a day. And it's not that we're aware of every single thought, but what we tend to do is we tend to glom on to the negative thoughts, the thoughts that are the loudest, the thoughts that are the noisiest, and the thoughts that are usually the most negative. And for me, there's not much you can do unless you are willing to take a look at the thoughts that you tell yourself to be able to change them. If you're not willing to look at them, then you're going to continue thinking them and you're going to be at the effect of them. So the Says Who method is this, as you know, very direct, straightforward questioning or investigation, the word that we've been liking to use back and forth, looking at those thoughts and finding out what they're about, if they're even real, if they're about old beliefs that we're still carrying into our current lives today. So responsibility, so important. What I say and Says Who, own your thoughts, all of them, not just the nice ones and the pretty ones and all that. Own the thoughts that you might even be embarrassed about having, shame around having, discomfort around having. The only way you can get to the other side of those thoughts is to take responsibility for them.
I love we keep talking about facing them, not running or hiding from them or fighting them. Just be with the thought. And it brings me back to the thing I wrote on one of my postcards. You must face the dragon to become the butterfly. So the only way I can get to the peace, to the love, is to face the fear. If I hide or run from the fear, which is usually the premise of all of my disconnectedness, is fear. If I take responsibility for the thought that provokes the fear, then I can change the thought and I don't have to be afraid. But I have to take responsibility. And where that started for me was in my 12-step work. In the third step, the step is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Here's the important part, as we understood him. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the important part of that, as we understood him, was for me is like, okay, how do I understand him? What is my understanding of this higher power? I don't care if you call it God or source, or I love what Richard Bach said in Illusions, the infinite radiant is. I love that. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. But what are my thoughts about that? And I take responsibility today for how I feel about that power, whatever you call that power. This is where this ties into taking responsibility, into your says who method. I had to look at what my beliefs were. And my beliefs were so inconsistent. On one hand, I believed that my source was a loving, caring, unconditionally loving God. And on the other take of it was I was going to die and go to hell if I didn't do everything I was told. So unconditional and conditioned. It was an inconsistent belief system. And today my belief is that if I have an inconsistent belief system, which I have to investigate to find out whether it is or not, it's like standing on a floating inner tube. You don't have a solid ground to stand on if your belief system is inconsistent. Does that make sense?
Right. Absolutely. And I talk about that in Says Who, and I say you really can't hold two conflicting thoughts simultaneously. That's why it's really important to know what we tell ourselves, because if we tell ourselves something and then we undermine the very thing that we want, we're not going to reach that goal. I talked about that previously, that you cannot, they'll cancel each other out.
Right.
And the more we take responsibility for the thoughts or catch them when we have them, for example, if you're going to use an addiction context, let's just say, you know, I really want to get sober, but I'm a failure. I'm not going to succeed at that. And look at how you have two conflicting thoughts that are going to cancel each other out. You have a desire, and that desire is, I'd like to get sober. And what you want to support that with is, and I'm going to do everything in my power to make that happen or go to where I need to go, be it 12 step or whatever it is that you do to take the step so that you can help yourself reach the goal that you want and ask for the help that you need. But if you say to yourself, I'm using that as an example, I really want to get sober. I really want to lose weight. I really want to get a good job. I really want to meet my soulmate. But if you support that desire, which is a healthy, wholesome desire to have, with the negative thought that undermines it, you're not going to reach your goal. And that's the conflict that we oftentimes face within ourselves. We have two push-pull thoughts that are happening simultaneously. So I think, Johnny, just to start with how we go through our day is to be aware of when we have a desire to do something and how we immediately undermine it and how we immediately want to take away from it, how we immediately want to throw ourselves under the bus by, you know, not allowing ourselves to support the desire that we have by telling ourselves, you and I talked about that recently, taking the sentence, I can't, and replacing it with I can, taking I won't, and replacing it with I will. So this is, you know, you talk about the conflict within. This is how we begin to take these fundamental steps to not continuing being in conflict within ourselves by the thoughts that we tell ourselves. And it goes back to taking responsibility.
Right. And I'm going to tie some of that into some of the 12-step work and the Course in Miracles stuff that so ties into that. The second of the 12 steps is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. But there's a part of that that gets missed that ties into what you were just saying. It's a great thing to believe that there's some source out there that can save me, that can miraculously make me a new person. But if I've got a head full of source can, source can, source can, and simultaneously, I've got a head full of I can't, I can't, I can't. I've created a conflict. So while I'm coming to believe in this outside source that can save me, I simultaneously have to start to believe in me. You were saying I have to change that I can't to I can.
Right.
And if I tie it into the source that I'm talking about, and I in no way want to imply somebody needs to believe in a God. Somebody needs to believe in anything. That's not what I'm saying. Whatever you believe in is fine. Just as long as you make your beliefs consistent and as while you're believing in this being, whatever, you're simultaneously starting to build confidence and belief in yourself. I went through a process with myself for that. I used to do this thing. I would go to the gym and I would say, okay, I'm going to do 30 minutes on the treadmill. I would get to 27 minutes every time, and I would start telling myself why that was enough. That's enough. I don't need to do 30 minutes. I did 27.
Right.
And part of my training was at that point when I became aware of that's how I was messing with myself, screwing myself, I would say, okay, I can do one more minute. I can do one more minute. Then I would get to 28. I would say, I can do one more minute. Next thing you know, I'm at the 30 minutes and I started to build. So the next thing you know, I'm doing 45 minutes and an hour on the treadmill.
Right.
Because I started to believe in myself.
Right.
So, but I had to change those I can'ts to I can.
Absolutely. And that's why, look, we can have desires, we can have goals, but if we don't support them, and again, it goes back to the thinking mind, it goes back to the thoughts. What are your thoughts doing to support you to get to where you want to go, to become who you want to be, to manifest what you want to manifest? You can have these amazing wishes and these amazing desires, but what you need to understand is now you want your thoughts to support it. And where you go into, you know, really keeping that support happening is to catch a thought when it doesn't want to support the very thing you want to do. So I do talk about in Says Who, how to be the observer when a thought comes in. And let's just say you wake up today and you say, this is going to be the first day that I'm going to take that step to wanting to become sober, to clean and sober. I'm going to take the first step to wanting to diet. I'm going to take the first step to trying to find that job. And if the next thought right after that comes up and goes, oh, you're such a loser, that's not going to happen. Boom, you catch it the minute you have that negative thought that wants to pull you down, that wants to undermine you, that wants to sabotage you, that wants to tell you you're not good enough and tell you all the I can'ts and all the I won'ts that you're going to hear like a symphony in your mind. Getting into the habit of recognizing the thoughts that do not support you and taking the operative word that we started the show with, responsibility. Our responsibility is to make sure that our thoughts are supporting us. Our responsibility is to make sure that our thoughts are our cheering squad. Our responsibility is to make sure that our thoughts are serving our well-being. That's our responsibility.
Right. And there's a, I'm going to tag on to that. You mentioned becoming our own cheerleader. Well, one of the things that was important for me in my own process was I had to learn how to celebrate my little victories. You know, when I did the 28 minutes, when I did the 29 minutes, when I made the 30 minutes, I had to say, yay, Johnny. And not feel like that was an arrogant thing to do. Yay, Johnny, I made the 30 minutes. Because in that celebration, I started to acknowledge that I could.
Right.
And that is so important. And the other thing about becoming self-aware through observation that I think is vital. When I catch myself, when I say, okay, I want to lose 30 pounds. And then I have that follow-up thought that you were talking about. Oh, that's so insane for you to think you're going to lose 30 pounds.
Right.
And I catch that. To me, part of the trick is to not at that point beat myself up for catching the thought. I have to like, okay, yes, I can. Yes, I can. Instead of beating myself up, because it is so, especially as an addict. Yeah, I'm going to say especially as an addict. We are so prone to self-demeaning internal dialogue. We berate ourselves to pieces. And there's a term that we use in the 12-step rooms called an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. So we either go way high that I'm the greatest or I'm the worst. Getting into that and learning how to be kind to myself while I'm training myself to like me. Basically, I'm training myself to like myself.
Right, exactly, which is so good. You know, it's really introducing a whole new way of communicating with yourself. It's like, try out a whole new way of self-talk. You know, especially if you're somebody who's really versed in negative self-talk and really critical self-talk, and you really know that you're good at beating yourself up, you're introducing a whole new way of self-talk with yourself. And again, I really always want to encourage This is one step at a time or one thought at a time. Let's go with that. Where you begin to really get so good that you're going to catch when that negative thought is just about to start to be a troublemaker for you. When it's about to say, oh, I really want to do this, but I'm not good at this. You know, the negative self-talk that we tell ourselves. To stay on responsibility, Johnny, I think that the best way we can really move towards changing our thoughts is to begin to work with them. The very first says who question says who. Who is saying this thought in my mind? I am. I am telling myself that I'm not good enough, that I'm never going to lose weight, that I'm never going to get sober, that I'm never going to find my soulmate, that I'm never going to be able to move out of this horrible situation that I'm in. That is the taking the responsibility. The very first question of says who method says who. Who is saying this thought in my mind? I am. I am telling myself this about myself, and I am now ready to change it. I am now ready to move towards taking the steps that I need to do to stop telling myself negative things so that I can't reach my goal, so that I can't realize the life that I really want to have. I'm going to begin now, and I'm going to begin now by taking that step to change.
Right. And that thing about now, I just want to say this to the listeners. You can do this at any age. You can be 14 or you can be 90. You can right. change that inner dialogue right now. I say right now, it's a process. It can be almost a painful process to look at the layers of self-deceit that we fed ourselves that keep us imprisoned in our own thought system. Or we can take responsibility and come to understand that, yes, we have been imprisoned, but we own the key. Right. We own the key to the prison that we, the self-imposed prison that we have locked ourselves up in our own thought system. So
right.
I am responsible for taking responsibility for how mm-hmm. I think.
Absolutely. That's key right there. That is so important. That type of honesty, if you will, you know, being able to say, hey, you know what? Today's going to be the first day that I'm going to really make an effort to be responsible for the thoughts that I'm telling myself. That kind of announcement, these kinds of declarations, even if you say it silently yourself, or nobody even has to hear you, or you want to shout it from a mountaintop, or you want to go outside and scream it out to a tree, it doesn't matter. When you make that decision, when you make that decision that you're ready to change and that you're ready to take responsibility for what you're telling yourself, that's it. That is the major first step you take to really changing your life, if you're really ready to do that.
Or let's shift for a moment and talk about society-based conditioning and familial conditioning. Okay. So, 'cause so many times when I've been trying to help someone get to this point, I hear, well, society conditioned me to whatever. I grew up in a family that conditioned me to believe whatever.
Right.
Let's talk about that conditioning for a moment. Where does that conditioning really come from?
Well, you know, conditioning is, to me, that goes straight to beliefs. That means that you've been told something that you should believe, do you know? And it's been told to you, and it's been, whether it's been told to you by a parent, a family figure, an authority figure, that that's something maybe you grew up with. And that, you know, to use the word condition, that you were basically instructed or that you were told that you have to think this way. And so many of the things that are told to us, whether we grew up hearing it in the household or whether the parent told you that and said, it's this way or the highway, you know, you got to think the way I think, or you got to believe what I believe. And we take that on as real. We take that on as true. And we believe it because we're told to believe it. And we, you know, oftentimes that happens when we're young. It happens when we're children. We're very impressionable. We're very vulnerable. We're very gullible. And we believe in our authority figures. Whether they're setting out to cause us harm or not, oftentimes there's no malintent. It's just the beliefs of other people. And it goes into adulthood. And the next thing you know, your conditioning has become your belief system. And that has become your core beliefs. And it's easy to blame it on, as you said in the beginning, I was conditioned to believe this way. Well, guess what? You can uncondition that anytime you want.
Yay.
By changing your belief that you're conditioned. So therefore you have to continue believing what you were told you have to believe. Do you know what I mean? You and I talk a lot about connecting the dots. That is connecting the dots. You can't deflect it. You can't push it off yourself, and you can't blame it on what was told to you. Like you said about the key and you being whether you're the warden or you're the gatekeeper or whatever you want to call it, open the key and let yourself out.
Right.
Let yourself out of that conditioning. Let yourself out of that belief system.
Right.
Set yourself free.
I'm going to make this personal for a moment. I was conditioned, which I make everything personal. I try to be real about who I am and my story. I grew up in a really odd situation, and nobody took responsibility for anything. And after I moved to Florida, away from my family in Kentucky, I had been told my whole life, conditioned, that I was one of those Callaways and I never amount to anything. And I get to Florida, and I finally get my own place to live, and I was so excited. But there's things that come with that, like paying bills, rent, electric, water, all that, which I really didn't want that part of it. So I walked out of a 12-step meeting one day, and I'm talking to this elderly gentleman, and he says, "So what's going on?" I said, "Man, they're going to shut my electric off because I didn't pay my bill." He said, "Well, why didn't you pay your bill?" I said, "Well, my dad never taught me about responsibility." And he said, "Where's your dad live?" I said, "Kentucky." He said, "Where do you live?" I said, "Well, right here in Sarasota." He said, "Your dad doesn't have a damn thing to do with you not paying that electric bill. You just didn't want to pay that electric bill." But I had conditioned myself that was my excuse for everything that I didn't want to do. Nobody taught me better.
Right.
I have a belief today that if you have the awareness that something is wrong in your life, something isn't working for you, you also have the ability to correct it. If you're aware of it, you can correct it. And that is huge for me. So I grew up with the idea, conditioned, outside of my family, within my family, even in my family, one of our credos was, we're Callaways and we're cursed. And I just accepted that.
But it is it's such a says who. I can't help myself. It's like, says who?
Well, my answer at the time would have been, Aura, everybody's saying it. So, but the thing is, I have to take responsibility, regardless of where I got the conditioning, whether it was my family, whether it was society, whether it was church, or whether it was school. I have to take responsibility for correcting the conditioning.
That's right. And you have to take responsibility for saying it stops here.
The buck stops here.
That's right. That belief, that thought, that conditioning, that lie, that story, that narrative, that stops with me.
Right.
That's it. I'm going to break that chain. It stops with me. And you are going to be the Callaway that's going to change that. You know, these are the thoughts, these are the new thoughts we tell ourselves. We have to defy that thinking, that conditioning that you mentioned, these belief systems that aren't even our own, that we've inherited from other people.
Right.
You know, you could have 20 generations of Callaways, one worse than the next or the last, and you're the Callaway that changed that. Guess what? You're the Callaway that broke the spell, that unlinked that chain, that opened yourself and flew out of that cage. Isn't that great? You're that Callaway. Let's celebrate that. That is what it's about. It's about saying, that's where we change the story. That's where we change the belief. It starts with us, and we have the power to do that. It starts with us, and it begins with what we tell ourselves. And even if you did or didn't say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to be the different Callaway. I'm going to be the Callaway that no one's ever seen before. I am that Callaway. That is the Callaway who I am.
I like to think of, I love to write, first off. I love to write. And I like to think of it like this. I am the author of the Johnny Calloway Book of Life. I write every page based on how I think. I believe that with all of my heart. So let's say the first 17 chapters of my book were like dark and painful and all that. I get to chapter 18, I can say, wait a minute. I want to write a new chapter. And it starts with the decision of, I want to write a new chapter.
Right.
It's decision.
Who do we think is writing our life story? Who do we think is writing this story of our life? I mean, look, I don't mean to get existential or philosophical or all of that, because you know, you and I can go there. But I'm talking about making a decision, even if it's just in the sense of, I'm going to write my story today.
Right.
My story today is going to be a different story than any day before today. Let me start with today. You know, I'm going to change it up today.
Right.
And we can.
Well, not only I'm going to carry that we can a step farther, we must. If we really want to find peace, finding peace of mind is the goal. Course in Miracles says the only thing that deserves your true vigilance is peace of mind. How beautiful is that? But how do I get vigilant about that? I decide through my thoughts to be vigilant for peace of mind. So
right.
Once I make that decision, I start moving in that direction.
Right.
Now, granted, it's a process because I have to peel away the layers of self-deceit. The lies that I've told myself about who I am, about what the world is, and about it's not a safe place. All of those layers of deceit have to be peeled away. Whether it's self-deceit or lies I was told by somebody else, it doesn't matter where the lie came from. What matters is I clung on to it.
Mm-hmm.
I accepted it as real.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that, Johnny, goes back full circle to taking responsibility.
Right.
Taking responsibility for what we believe is real. Taking responsibility for believing what other people told us who we are. Taking responsibility for the notorious reputation a family name has. You know, we have to take responsibility for changing that up. We can do it. And when we take responsibility to change our thinking and our belief system, that's when our life changes. But we have to take responsibility for the thoughts that we tell ourselves, whether they were born from other people and they were born from our conditioning and they were born from our upbringing, wherever it originated from. It's great to identify it. That's my second says who question. Have I heard someone say this thought before? Because when you can recognize it, yeah, that's something my father used to say. That's something my mother used to say. That's something that my great grandmother used to say. And it's not my thought and it's not my belief. And I can change that out now, today. And that's when the whole story starts to change. And we start to write our story. We start to write that chapter.
I love it.
We continue doing it day in and day out.
And moment by moment.
That's right. Moment by moment. Absolutely.
Moment by moment. One of the lessons in the workbook of A Course in Miracles that has meant everything to me is I am determined to see this differently.
Right. And that's beautiful. You know, it's like we can see it differently. And, you know, by the way, I want to say, you know, to use your exercise analogy, a lot of the times what we have in our own mind, our own thoughts and our own imagination, you know, you're exercising. It's like, oh my God, I can't do one more push-up. This is too much. I can't, you know, if we change that thought to, you can do it. Go on, you can do it. And suddenly you find yourself like, oh, I'm actually doing it. Wow, that wasn't so bad after all.
Right.
You know, we're kind of drama queens and kings in a way. We think the sky is falling so often because we tell ourselves something like, oh my God, I can't do this. Oh my God, this is so horrible. I'm not minimizing and I'm not diminishing something that is genuinely unpleasant. But where we have to really be proactive is when we tell ourselves something that changes our misery, that changes our frustration, that changes the situation that we're in that we're not happy with. That's what we have to begin to do. And it's not so horrible to do that. We're capable of doing it. We can do it just by changing one thought and realizing, you know, that wasn't so horrible after all. I released a thought that was really negative, and I replaced it with something that was actually positive. And guess what? It wasn't such a horrible nightmare to do that. It actually worked for me. It worked favorably for me. Right. You know, we think it's so difficult, and we're climbing up the Himalayas. I mean, it's hard. It's hard work. I'm not going to say that it's not. But when we do it moment by moment, step by step, thought by thought, and we get past that negative thought because we replaced it with a positive thought, we go, hey, that actually worked. That made me feel good. I want more of that.
Right.
And you know what I mean? This whole thing about, like, I know it's hard, I know it's difficult, but so much of the I know it's hard, I know it's difficult is what we tell ourselves.
Right.
You know, to use the exercise analogy, okay, I'll do the full hour. It's not the worst thing in the world for me to convince myself that I can work out for a whole hour. Gee, how remarkable is that?
Yeah. You know, the stories that we tell ourselves are so important. I'm going to direct this to the addict right now, to the addictive personality. I remember when I first stopped drinking and drugging, I was talking to my 12-step sponsor one night, and it was a Friday, and I had worked all week, and I had this paycheck, which was really, really big for me. And I said, you know, I just feel like come Friday that I deserve a 12-pack of beer. And he said to me, he said, did you ever think that you might actually deserve what it's like not to have a 12-pack of beer?
That's so good.
I had never thought of that. Are you kidding me? Everything in my life was about justification for the 12-pack of beer. But I never thought about what happens if I don't have it.
Right.
What comes from actually using this money toward paying my rent? So
I know. Changing out those thoughts, you know, changing one out for the other. And then suddenly you change it out and you're like, wow, I'm going to get something more out of this than I never even imagined.
Maybe since I didn't buy the 12-pack of beer, I could buy myself that stereo that I've wanted for years. So,
exactly.
Yeah, that was not a part of my thought process.
I do think that so many of the thoughts that we tell ourselves, we make it so hard on ourselves. We actually make it harder on ourselves because if you really even like thought about the energy of I can't, you know, when we say I can't, it's because we feel that something is overpowering us. It feels like it's insurmountable. It feels like, oh, I can't. Like even if you gave like a voice to it, you know, if we did some play acting and we gave a voice to what I can't sounds like, we could say all sorts of things sounding like a child. I can't do it. It's too hard. I can't. And then we say, I can. And suddenly we have newfound confidence and we have newfound strength in ourselves. And we can say it like, yeah, I can do that. You know, by really getting ourselves charged up with positive energy. You know, I can't and I won't and all that negative talk that we say to ourselves, it can have definitely a downer energy to it.
You know, I, in my early recovery, after I applied A Course in Miracles to my 12-step work, I became incredibly aware of that negative voice, that mm-hmm. I can't, that it won't ever work for me, all of that kind of stuff. I identified that after I discovered A Course in Miracles as being my ego. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I had identified that voice as being me. That was me. Well, once I became aware of this whole ego concept through A Course in Miracles, I gave that voice an actual name. And I called it Danny Joe because in my youth, there was a guy that I knew that every time I saw him, we got in a fight. And it was like his purpose for living was to try to beat me up. Which was the ego. So how that ties into all of this is what I started doing so that it was no longer my identity. When I would get that voice, you're not going to get that job. You'll never get a job that good. You don't deserve that. You've done too much bad in your life to be able to get something that good. I would say, Danny Joe, you need to shut up.
Good for you. See, that's great. And that works.
It does. And simultaneously, I was telling that voice to shut up, and I was unidentifying myself as that voice.
Right. But I think that, you know, I mean, I love that story because I think you're giving it a name. You know, excuse me, today when they say things like Negative Ned or Debbie Downer, you know, these kinds of, if we really look at it and say, even if it's our own voices and it doesn't have a name, like this guy that was the bane of your existence, like he was out to get you, you know, whether you give it a name or you don't, you know that that's an adversarial voice, that that voice is out to get you.
Right.
That voice, it wants to do, some way, somehow, that voice wants to do you in. That thought wants to wreak havoc. It wants to trip you up. It wants to, it's no different than that guy really genuinely wanting to beat you up. That guy genuinely wanting to hurt you. Our voices do the same thing. Our thoughts want to beat us up. It's like having a bully inside our mind, right. You know? So if we can really recognize it as such and say, hey, sorry, thought, you know what? I have no use for you. You know, I say that in Says Who, I said, your negative thoughts and your thoughts that really sabotage you and undermine you, make you feel horrible, you have no use for those thoughts. They don't really, they're not there to serve your well-being. They have nothing good to give you. And you owe it to yourself to let the positive thoughts, and I always say they're waiting in the wings. They're just waiting to jump forward like little puppy dogs. Like, oh, you want me? You want me to tell you how great you are? You want me to tell you that you're really worthy and that you're lovable? It's like a puppy dog wants to just love you up. Let your thoughts love you up a little bit rather than from to be the bully that wants to just beat you up like the guy was wanting to beat you up. And you gave that thought that name. That becomes your bully. That becomes your enemy. That becomes your adversary. Your thoughts should be your support team, your friends, your cheering squad. They should not be your bully. They should not be your heckler. They should not be your prisoner. That is not what your thoughts should be. If they're that, you have no use for them.
And transforming those thoughts from the bully to the friend takes training.
Right.
It's like taking your mind to the gym. And instead of doing 30 minutes on the treadmill, you're doing 30 minutes of thought training. I went through a process after a very, very dark time in my life. I saw this therapist. I only saw him a couple of times, but he gave me some really good tools. He gave me a spiral notebook. And he said, I want you to draw a line down the middle of the page. He said, on the left-hand side, I want a column that is your negative thoughts. On the right-hand side, I want a replacement positive thought. In the beginning, the left side was full. I had almost nothing on the right side because I couldn't come up with the positive replacement thought. You talk about replace and...
Release and replace, which is
same. Release and replace?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. But you got to identify the negative thought in order to be able to replace it with a positive thought. So I went through that process. And after quite a long period of time of doing that, the right-hand side of the page grew. But that was me taking my mind to the mental gym. I had to exercise the positive thinking side of my brain because it was asleep.
You know, there's an exercise that I do in one of my workshops where I have people write down something positive that they want to tell themselves about themselves. And I say, take that piece of paper and throw it on the floor or throw it in a garbage can. And then I say, and then write something negative about yourself and take that piece of paper and crumble it up and throw it in the garbage can. I said, which of those pieces of paper would you want to retrieve? Which one would you want to take back? Would you want to take back the thought that tells you that you're worthless or useless or unlovable or whatever you wrote down? You know, if I were to say, take that thought and throw it in the garbage, why would you go rummaging through the garbage to take it back out? Do you want to keep that thought? Do you want to bring it back into your mind?
Wow. No.
So you talk about making that list. It's like if you took all those negative thoughts, you know, even if you did this as an exercise, and it's really great to use that, by the way, as an exercise, to write it down on a piece of paper and like little post-its. Which of those two would you want to keep and which of those would you want to throw away? Your positive thought that's telling you you're good and that you are worthy and that you're going to be successful and that you deserve this and you deserve whatever it is that you want. Or do you want to hold on to a thought that really you know, keeps telling you that you're not going to amount to anything, what is your attachment to it? Is it because it's familiar to you and you're afraid to let go of it and you don't know what to replace it with? I am saying that if you just even did that as a writing exercise and you wrote down what you, like you did, Johnny, the negative thought, and next to that, put a positive replacement, and then look at your list, the before and after. What do you want to have as real? Your positive thoughts that you wrote down or your negative thoughts?
Aura, darling, I'm sorry, but our time is up once again. And I know you and I could talk another hour. But
I know. Ooh, bye, Johnny. Keeps flying by. Okay.
Unfortunately, people will get tired of listening to us before we get tired of talking. I want to invite people to come back next week and listen to Aura and I talk about how her Says Who method works with the second and third step of the 12 steps program. So I'm excited about that because I know they really work together. They will really help us. And I want to say thank you to all our listeners. I want to say thank you, Aura. I love doing this with you. And I want to invite everybody to come back.
Johnny. Thanks, Johnny. And until next time, everybody be well.
And I also want to say, go to SaysWhoForTheAddictivePersonality.com and go to our Says Who for the Addict Facebook page. Please leave us a question either place. Talk to us about what's going on with you, how we might be able to help you with Aura's method. We want to see you grow and we want to grow with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye-bye.